Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back. Financial issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. Let me just quick give you a rundown on the ag report. You know what? Maybe I should wait in case people are tuning in just at that time that we normally give it. So I won't do it right now. I just thought of that. Doesn't make much sense to do that now. Anyway, all the indices haven't budged. They're right about where they've opened. The Dow's down a half of 1%. It is lower. It was down 0.75%. It is down a half of 1%. The NASDAQ really turning in better territory. They were lower by about 0.75%. They're just below a quarter of a percent right now. So maybe they'll turn positive. The S&P moving more in a positive trend as well. So that's good news. Maybe it's got something. Maybe we got some good EIA numbers out. I'm not sure. They might not. They're not usually out till 10:15. But that, nonetheless, it's good news. The Dow's not moving a whole lot, but we're getting some good news there, and that's good to see. Hopefully, it'll hold. 844-707-5533. Business inventories were flat, but business inventory sales jumped to 1.6%, and that's very good news. So now this is the month of March, by the way. So the month of March, we saw inventory sales jump up. So it would stand to reason that their inventories would be flat. But sales up 1.6%, that's a pretty good number. So we like to see that. Very interesting. The media, here's really a news flash. The media is lying about Trump and China tariffs. Really? Who would think? Oh, my gosh. You know, it's pretty funny. I sent out on my Twitter page, I put an alert out about a study that was done. And when I put the alert out, I said something like on Twitter, I said, wow, this is really breaking news here that I'm sure nobody has realized. And I wonder what they paid the organization to do the study. But the study basically revealed that there's bias in the media. Who would have thought? Can you imagine? So I saw that. I thought it was rather comical and put that out. So interesting. But now, again, something else comes out saying the media is lying about Trump and tariffs. The hysteria must have a political agenda because the amount that's being put out there is and all the things that are going to happen as a result are wrong. Oil is moving down based on supply demands that are coming out. Iran worries. There is some issues with Iran, as we know. Saudi Arabia is suffering from some drone attacks on pipelines. That has been a problem. We have the shipping lanes, some problems with shipments either being confiscated or stopped in the Persian Gulf. So that is somewhat of a problem. One of the things that ought to be moving markets in positive territory is home builder confidence came out, and home builder confidence hits a 7-month high. Man, it's about time. This is a May number, home builder confidence hitting a 7-month high. This would have a lot to do with sustainable lower rates on 30-year mortgages. It wasn't just a flash in the pan. These rates on 30-year mortgages did drop, and not only did they drop, they have sustained this drop. it wasn't because of what the Federal Reserve did, but they are pegged somewhat to the 10-year, and we've seen that interest rate dropping, but the mortgage rate, 30-year mortgage, is down, and that is good news. Buyers are coming back in. Applications are up a bit, and the sentiment among home builders is high, primarily because consumer sentiment is good. Wages are higher. Job opportunities higher. More hires coming out of college. Graduates graduating college are graduating college to only take off a few weeks before they start their new job. That was something that we never had, by the way, during the Obama administration. We had the lowest rate of hiring among college students in the history of the nation for seven straight years, and that has turned around and that has changed. These are the very people that screamed at the sky crying because Hillary lost the election. They ought to be thanking their lucky stars that Hillary lost the election, because now they get to graduate and get a job. Isn't that a novel thing? So all of those things happening, yes, retail sales disappointed a little bit, and there are some lingering fears in reference to trade, but it doesn't seem to be having much of an impact at all on what is going on in the markets right now. When we look at the ag commodities, the grains, corn, and I'm giving you July numbers right now, but corn is up 2.3%. That's a pretty significant move upward, and this is for July contracts of corn. Wheat is up 2.4%. Oats up 1.5%, 1.5%. Everything is green with the exception of rice and canola. Everything else is positive. Beans, positive by almost 1% right now for July deliveries. So even soybean going up, even in the midst of these trade concerns. Coffee is up, sugar is up, so orange juice up, other commodities. Lumber is way down. Lumber has been a problem. Cotton is way down. I know we have a lot of cotton farmers listening, but July delivery of cotton is down another 1%. Lumber down 2.25%. Now, maybe demand is picking up and supply has been down for a while, and maybe this is just a matter of ramping up supply. Live cattle, these are August numbers. Live cattle up slightly, about 0.8%. Feeder cattle down about 0.8%. Lean hog up 1%. So that's the best I can do for you. By the way, that lean hog number is a July number, not an August number. The cattle numbers are August numbers. So that's the best I can do for you, and you're going to have to live with it till Craig gets back from China. So we apologize for that, but you know how that goes. He's doing a work there. He's going to China. He's going to come back a lot more informed and even better than he was, and that's going to be good for all of you. That is for sure. So, Craig, in China, as we speak, the Nasdaq did just turn positive, and the Dow and the S&P is about to. I suspect when we come back off this break, the S&P will be in positive territory. The Dow way off its lows. It's only down now, just a little above 0.25%. So hopefully that'll turn positive here shortly. But there's still Boeing stock and a couple others that are weighing on that. So good news. Somebody asked me about a very important industrial stock yesterday. It wasn't on the air. It was off air. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. But we got to get to phones. 844-707-5534. We've got a line open. We are on the phone for the next hour and 45 minutes. And we'll get your questions on Facebook and off the website.
The opening statement in the Constitution of the United States says this, that we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. I don't know what part of that we don't get anymore. That was written by men who cared about this country deeply.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia.
Welcome back. Financial Issues. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. Welcome. And we are going to get to your questions, your calls. You might want to keep trying. Cue your call up, and we'll get to those. So stay with us on that. At least I hope you will, because we've got lines open. 844-707-5533. There were filled. Somebody dropped trying to get through there, but we do have, be patient, let it ring. 844-707-5533. If you want to cue your call up, we have a line open, and we're going to get to your calls. So right now, the NASDAQ still moves in pretty good territory, still positive. It's up about an 1/8 of 1%, so that's good. We talk about a dramatic swing. That is the swing of the day so far, well above this. So it's taking a pretty dramatic swing. So we'll see how that all ends up. 844-707-5533. Is there someone online too? Okay, I can't see it. That's what I was wondering. Okay. Let me go to Tom. Tom's calling us from Georgia. Hey, Tom.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call today.
Sure.
Just wanted some advice. From, I guess, your standpoint.
Okay.
Mid-40s. I've had some losses the last several years just due to some personal things, but I get a little bit of cash, make about 75, bring in about 75,000 in 401k as well. A little heavy on the mortgage side, but just trying to step back and make some retirement plans. And just wanted to get your thoughts about what you might suggest. I like trying to get into rental properties and some different investments. But again, just kind of throwing that over to you. I want to hear your thoughts.
So, Tom, is your 401k, do they match anything on that?
They do. They do. I believe it's to 5%.
Are you doing that yet? Are you matching? You able to
I
do?
I am.
Okay,
I am.
Good. All right. Yeah.
We do have an ESOP. With the company as well that I'm involved with.
Oh, good.
As heavily as possible, so that's been nice.
Great. That is good. That's going to help you out, I'm sure. So I like rental property. I think rental property is a great source of income. Obviously, when you retire someday, income is going to be a concern, something that you're going to want to try to generate. And if you already have a little bit now and it's something that you feel comfortable with and doing, and you know, I don't know anything about the where you live, but certainly it is, you know, it's a great source of income. You won't be able to generate an income higher than you will generate on rental property in your investment strategy on a consistent basis. It's very hard to do that. Your income to ratios, income to investment on rental property is very, very good. Now, obviously, when you have rental properties, there are some risk. You want to try to keep the debt down to a minimum and make sure that you have good positive cash flow. Before you buy any rental property or expand your rental property portfolio, you got to make sure that under worst case scenario, you're going to survive. So in other words, we have a crash in the economy. Everybody's getting laid off. Nobody's renting anything. Everybody's moving back home or, you know, just barely getting by. They're losing their job. You might have it rented, but they can't pay the rent. Whatever the situation is, are you going to be able to carry that property? And that's what I try to encourage people. That's the one thing that everybody should look at. Look at the worst case scenario and say, will I be able to carry it? I know people that have rental properties that are in and are around one of the largest military bases in the country, or, you know, a very large military base in the country. They don't have rental issues. They don't have economic issues, because obviously military personnel being transferred, they're still getting paid and they're still looking for rental properties. So it's a little bit of a different situation. And of course, every area of the country is different based on their industrial layout and how many companies they have there and so on and so forth. But I like rental properties, and it's a great thing to look at as you get close to retirement. So I think that's a good step since you've already taken it. As long as you're okay being a landlord, and you know, your big liability is obviously vacancy, rent, I mean, I'm sorry, taxes and insurance. And that's the major liability there.
What about as far as going into debt to acquire more properties? Would you say never do it? Or is there a percentage at which, if I say I'm only going to be borrowing at 50% of what I have already in full ownership, is that safe? Or is that?
Yeah, I think as long, look at your cash flow. And as long as you're generating a decent cash flow still, you know, after the debt, and it sounds like you will be able to if you're only financing 50% of the value, then yeah, I'm okay with it as long as the cash flow is positive. But you need to work now while you're working on using that cash flow, that positive cash flow, to put back into the debt, back into the mortgage. Because the goal is to try to retire with as little debt on those rental properties, if any at all, as you possibly can. Because it's the no debt on the property that's going to help you weather the storm that I'm concerned about in, you know, the economy turning down and renters become a little bit more scarce, where you might have to lower prices to get those renters in there. So that's, it's all about that cash flow and managing that risk that you could have. Hopefully you never will, but that we could have.
Okay. Well, great.
All right. Thank you.
Sounds good.
All right, Tom. I'm glad you called. I appreciate it. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Brian. Brian's calling us from Oregon. Hi, Brian.
Morning, Dan. We love you.
Thank you.
Dan, I saw a show this morning. The sheep are making noise here. Let me get away from them. I saw a sell order for HC-47, and we're short-term hold on that. Does that still apply to us?
Well, no. I mean, I said in the – you probably didn't see the alert yet. You might have just saw the commentary side on it. But in the alert, I said that, you know, look, if you're in this for – I think I did. I hope I did. I didn't see the alert myself, but it was very early this morning when I wrote it, so anything could have happened. But I think I said that, look, if you are if it's not in an IRA account, I said, and it's in an investment account, then you got to deal with capital gains. And I don't have a problem if you want to risk waiting it out for the capital gains. I don't have a problem with that. It might even be a benefit. I'm not saying this is going to tank. I'm saying we need to get out and take a wait-and-see approach with this and see what they can do with their financials. I'll just give you an example, and this is just my scale. It's no real hard, fast, rule. But if a five is a very, very strong financials, low debt, good, strong financial companies, they went from a 5 to a 1. And so that
December?
What's that?
Since December?
Since December, yes, since December. And so my real issue on it, Brian, because normally I wouldn't even be alarmed by that, and it wouldn't be a big concern. But unfortunately, I don't think, now there's more detail coming out, but they didn't do a good enough job with an explanation of that. And I'll tell you what my fear is, because I've seen this 1,000 times. My fear is that something was misstated. And if something was misstated, it still might not be the end of the world for the stock or my enthusiasm about the stock. But if something was misstated, and if that comes out, it's going to drop like a rock. So we have an opportunity to buy back in. So on my alert, I said, look, let's sell it now. And put a buy order in, and I put a price in there as to what I want to put a buy order in and see what happens. If it hits that buy number and we buy it back, that's a good thing. But so not, I don't like to put a sell order in on a short-term gain like this ever. And I can't remember the last time I did it. It's been years and years and years, but I don't like doing that. But I just felt like my first call to duty here was to protect the gain here. And by the time, my concern is by the time I know for certain what the issue is, it may be down to, 50%, 60%.
Yes,
and we've missed it.
So hearing all of that and knowing that we're short term, and it's not a big deal. The tax thing is not a big deal. I'm more thinking about, well, we're up 55%.
Right.
So, and
right.
That's a significant position for us. And I can use that because you've put out some other buys that we're really short on in sectors,
right.
Industrials and IT. I can use that for that. If you think that there's going to be a potential buying opportunity to take that position in the future, what do you think?
I think there will be. And, I'll tell you, I don't get a chance to sell early morning when the market's open. In my IRA, I put a sell order in on it. I'm selling it. So I don't know what's going to happen with it. I might end up being positive from now until the cows come home and we'll all be sorry that we sold it. But at the same time, let's err. I'm like you. I'm up. I was up 52%. So, I say let's err on the side of caution. Let's sell it. I would rather see you do it. Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. I just closed out of something. I didn't want to close out. Anyway, 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. We got lines open. We're going to stay with phones, questions. So if you've got a question, you can queue it up. Remember, you can go to the website. If you're watching on financialissues.org, there is now a sidebar there that you can ask questions. And we'll answer those as well. So you can get to those. Speaking of that, Dave and Darlene asked, when I tried to purchase E36 in my Fidelity IRA account, I got a message requiring me to change my account to very aggressive before I could buy it. Why is that? Should I do that? I am retired, but I have an income portfolio and only buy stocks on your buy list. Well, that's an income stock, and it's a great income stock. So when you set your IRA account up, and you won't remember this, I don't know how long you've had it, but I suspect that when you set it up, generally they ask you questions to rate your aggressiveness, how aggressive you want to be. And they might be, they might have something like, very conservative, moderately conservative, conservative. And they might have, aggressive, moderately aggressive, very aggressive, or something in those lines. Or they might have a rating by number where you ask, I don't know what Fidelity does, where you've been asked several questions and you've answered them on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 or something like that. But there's information in there about you, and your age would have something to do that with that, and the fact that you're retired. So they ask you all of these questions, and if they didn't ask you outright to select where you are on this scale of aggressiveness, then they're asking you now to do it because they're saying that they, in their opinion, this is a very aggressive stock. Now, if you're retired and you checked, I'm looking for income, they look at this as a small cap aggressive equity. And that's all they look at. They're not looking at the income that it's producing. So they look at that and say, this is really not right for you. And that's why they're doing that. So I wouldn't be concerned about it. I am surprised, though, that they're not letting you purchase it. It's one thing to give you a warning saying, hey, this is fairly aggressive in our opinion, sure you want to buy it, but they're asking you to actually change what you've selected, which I don't have a problem with. It doesn't mean you have to be very aggressive, and it doesn't mean that it's going to change your portfolio to be very aggressive. Now, I assume that this is a brokerage account that you manage, so it's not really going to change any of that. So I would just go ahead and change it. I think that's fine, and you don't have to be too awfully concerned about what that's looking like. Okay, let's see. Somebody else is asking me. I seem to have lost that for the moment. Craig is asking me about. Not Craig. I'm sorry. I'll come back to you, Craig. Gerald is asking me. I'm down in CD28. Is it time to get out, or should I dollar cost average? I am looking very close at that. Europe is killing that stock. That is the primary problem with that stock. The majority of their business, yes, they do some business and have some issues in China. China could be impacting that a little bit. I don't know. I don't think it's manufacturing, though, that's impacting them. I think it's sales that is impacting them, and that's coming out of the Eurozone because they're very, very big in all the European nations, and that would be one of the reasons why that stock is getting beat up, and it's likely to stay down. I can't say that I would wouldn't dollar cost average. So, you know, if we look at this stock, it's down 22% year to date. So it started out the year fairly strong. And as things have progressively gotten worse from the end of February on in the Eurozone and other parts of the world, a global slowdown and such, this stock has progressively gotten worse as well. And it is, it's a small stock. It's a small company. It's a micro cap company. It's always going to be volatile. It's lost a lot of capitalization. It's only, it's down to about $900 million in capitalization. The enterprise value is $1.5 billion. I wouldn't sell it. I wouldn't get out. Would I dollar cost average? No. Probably at this point, I would go back to what I say to somebody else and a lot of people. I would wait for the 40-day moving average to change on this stock and to turn positive. So I would wait till you see 40 days. It's still not going to be near maybe where you bought it out, but we want to see a trajectory where it starts turning up again. Just to give you a heads up, that is extremely unlikely to happen until best case scenario, the fall of the year. So, but I don't think you should sell out, and I would hold off on dollar cost averaging. So hopefully that helps you a little bit, Gerald. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Joe. Joe's calling us from Louisiana. Hey, Joe.
Good morning. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing okay. Thanks.
I had a question about your opinion on how a presidential term in our country compared to other countries, especially communist countries that have no term, puts us at a disadvantage.
A disadvantage. Well, right now, it is putting us in a disadvantage in the sense that some are saying that it has taken years for us to get here with China, to get to this place. And some are criticizing this president saying, well, he's trying to do too much too fast. You know, this is going to be a long, slow process. President Trump is trying to do this fast because he does feel a sense of urgency, not for us, not for the economy, but for America's future. Because he probably, and I don't know this, and it hasn't been reported as such, but I got to believe that he's feeling like, I got to get this done, because if I don't get it done, it's probably never going to get done. And I would agree with him on that. He's absolutely right. This is a time, you know, we don't realize, the average person in America doesn't realize, I do believe the average person does care, they don't realize what this president has been doing is so much about bringing back strength in America, not economic strength, that is true, that comes with it, but he's bringing back a strength, a powerhouse of economic development in America that we have lost. We haven't lost it because we have failed in some way as American people to produce it or make it happen. We've lost it because we politically have lost the will to continue to fight for American exceptionalism. You know, one of the hardest things in sports to do, in my opinion, is to be undefeated. It's very, very hard to have an undefeated season, regardless of the sport, because you, at some point in time, it's human nature, you begin to lose your edge for wanting to be exceptional. You lose your edge for we have to work exceptionally hard to continue to win. And we have to understand that everybody's coming after us and we can't ever let that down. And I think that an undefeated team is more about, and a lot of people would disagree with me on this, is more about the incredible talent they have and is more about the leadership of the coach. Because it is hard to keep men or women, whatever it might be, motivated for an entire season and help them understand that we've got to keep being the best we can be for the next 45 minutes, the next 2 hours, what next, 180 minutes, whatever it is. We've got to do that day in and day out. We've got to make sure we do that. And, you know, it's a great analogy to use for what we have going on in America for the last 20 years. We have lost our exceptionalism, and we haven't had the leadership coming out of Washington, the desire to not with any kind of prideful lack of humility that would seemingly be considered bad pride in some way, but just this strong desire to keep America strong and to make sure the exceptionalism that we have had stays in place. Not for us, but for future generations. I believe that this president has that. I believe this president has something that we haven't seen since Ronald Reagan. And before Ronald Reagan, it was a long time since we have seen that. So I don't think we could skip maybe. We could say, you know, John F. Kennedy wanted it, Ronald Reagan wanted it, and now President Trump. And so I think he feels this sense of urgency. If he were going to be president for the next 15 years, he could be a little bit more political.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Remember, you can put your calls up, your questions up on Facebook or our website. You can do that if you're watching at financialissues.org. And you can call in. We have lines open, 844-707-5533. Joe, I hope you're still listening. Joe had asked me from Louisiana. Let me just tell you something, Joe. There are a couple other reasons that I could give on that, but I don't want to emphasize too much some of the good. And the reason why I don't want to do that is because all of the good, like some of what I just laid out on term limit or against term limits or keeping this power, is minimized dramatically by the positives of having term limits. So I don't want to make it sound like that it's a good thing. It is never, 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 never a good thing to have indefinite periods of power. It's never a good thing. And I don't believe it ever will be a good thing. And it certainly wouldn't be for America. And we have a long, long, long history, a long track record of history to prove that point out. So, you know, but just to use that in context of trade, you know, this is a president that I believe, and I wish more than anything that this president would articulate that and talk about that. I think it would serve him really well. And I don't believe that he's really kind of figured out that if he would just relax and articulate his accomplishments and articulate the reasons behind some of the things that he is doing in great detail, that there's more to it than just meets the eye, we wouldn't be so focused on just what meets the eye. And that's a problem. That's a more of a PR problem with the presidency, that apparently I know for a fact that he is surrounded by good people that get that and see that. And obviously they're just unable to witness to him to that effect. But look, I do believe that he feels a sense of urgency. He wants this China deal. Yes, he wants it to be part of his legacy. He wants to be the president that turned a very, very, very bad situation for America into a catalyst, into a gasoline that he's being thrown on the fire of this economy to just keep it blazing for many, many years to come. And he knows that. And he wants that to be part of his legacy. I do too. I want it to be a part of somebody's legacy, and I want it to be done now. Because all of you out there, and I know I am sick and tired of China, sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of hearing people say, we don't have any manufacturers all going to China. I'm sick and tired of it because it's true, number one. And because we just let it happen. We encouraged it to happen. We just gave it away. And we're giving the store away. I don't need to remind anybody. We have $20 trillion worth of debt. $20 trillion worth of debt. You know what? Give me the tariffs. Give me the tariffs. Let's get them into the Treasury Department. Let's start paying down this debt. Let's start having surpluses. Let's get it right here. Let's have free trade with everybody. We should be right now working on the Eurozone saying, look, we want to help you out. I'll tell you what, we're not going to charge you a nickel to bring over a battery, coffee, an auto part, a tire, whatever it is, nothing. And we expect you to do the same. We don't want to be charged anything. We want you to tell us how much the car costs. And you send it over here. Of course, you got your shipping costs. Whatever that is, it is. We have our shipping costs. Whatever that is, it is. We're putting that into our line, our cost for a product. That's it. No tariffs, no taxes, nothing. That's what we ought to have. That's what we want to have. If the product's too cheap, then the American people are probably going to come to the realization that it is a cheap product that's not worth buying. If the product to the realization that it's worth the expense because it's very, very well made. Why do companies buy machinery from Switzerland? Why would they do that? So expensive because it's the best machine. Years and years. Look, we need a free trade agreements everywhere, not just China. We got to be working on that. So the president is doing that. But look, the term limits are always going to be a far better plan for us. The founding fathers were extremely smart in doing that. We can't have a situation, and that is the problem with the Senate. That is the problem with the House of Representatives. Can you imagine what would get done if we had a third of the Senate every year that was in their last term that they could ever run? Think of what they could get done. Think of what they could do if they said, now they could be lazy and do nothing, or they could say, I'm going to leave a legacy, and I'm going to work hard to fight for this for America. And I want to be able to have this on my resume when I go into the private sector. I've served my country well for 6 years or whatever it is. I've served my country well, and I'm going back into the world to out of this service just like somebody in the military, and I'm going to have a great resume for what I've done and what I've cared about for America. I mean, it's the way it ought to be. So I'm all for that, but look, he does feel a sense of urgency. I feel it too. We've got to get it done. There's no doubt about it. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Bobby. Bobby's calling us from West Virginia. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Hey, I just have a few questions, being an old guy. I've turned 70, and I've got a few annuities and an IRA.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that you have to cash them in by 70, the year 70 and a half. But I've also heard that you can, it's the year after you're 70 and a half. Can you clarify that for me?
If you turn 70 and a half this year, you've got until April.
70 and a half.
Yes. If you turn 70 and a half this year, you have until April 15th to take your minimum required distribution.
Next year?
Yeah, April 15th.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, but I've heard also that you still have to pay the taxes in the year you turn 70 and a half, not
that is
the
correct.
Year after.
That is correct.
So what would be better? Would it be better to go ahead and take the annuities and IRA this year, since I'm going to have to pay taxes on it anyway?
Yeah, absolutely.
So not wait till
right. The
April
only reason you can wait till your April 15th is so you can wait until the day of you have to file your taxes.
Okay.
That's the only reason. But you're filing your taxes for this year.
Okay.
So do
I have to actually take it when I'm 70 and a half in June or
no.
just this year?
No, just this year.
Just this year, so I can wait up until December.
If you want, yes, you can.
And not get penalized or anything.
Correct.
That's mainly my question, and I certainly appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm glad you called, Bobby. Thank you. Good stuff. Yeah, and, you know, that's always edifying for everybody. I said Bobby. I didn't mean Bobby. Did I? Yeah, that was Bobby. Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, minimum required distribution. And remember this, folks. Bobby said he had annuities that I assume were IRA annuities, or we wouldn't have to be worrying about the 70 and a half. And he also had some IRAs, he said. When you were you're required to take your minimum required distribution out of the total amount of money you have that is qualified. So you have $1,000 here, then you've got $1,000 in this IRA, you've got $2,000 in this 401k that you had from when you were working. You have to take your minimum required distribution on that total amount. But you don't have to take it out of each account. You just have to take that total amount from one of the accounts. So you don't have to say, and this is another reason why I like people to combine all of their IRA accounts, get them in one place, so there's no chance of you missing one of the minimum required distributions. It's always, it's because, you know, maybe it's easy now.